Opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and not necessarily the opinions of Jazz 91.9 or Clark Atlanta University.
Welcome to The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. This weekly public affairs program features dialogue and community engagement with leaders and organizations making a difference in the areas we serve.
Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host of The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, I reached out to our political consultant, Dr. William Boone from the Clark Atlanta University Political Science Department, and wanted to speak with him about the results of the 2020 election. Dr. Boone, welcome back to The Local Take.
Hello, Kiplin. It's always my pleasure to be with you.
Well, I am so glad that you were available to spend some time with us, and I want to dive right in. You know, Georgia turned blue. Do you think this is a, you know, once-in-a-century event? And I grew up, Georgia was blue. But is this backlash against Trump, or is this truly changing demographics?
You know, in Georgia, things have been changing for quite a while. I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that at least since 2008, in looking at the presidential race with Obama, that the popular vote for Obama was in the mid-40s. And in 2012, it repeated itself again a little higher. And even Clinton got in the mid-40s. And also remember that in the 2018 election, you had a flipping of some Republican seats in state legislature to the Democrats. So it's been a progressive thing. It's not something that's happened overnight and is not fully complete yet. It is less red than what it was. It's more purple now. And we'll know. Another indicator may well be what happens on the 5th of January when the two Senate seats will be filled. That'll be another key indicator as to whether or not Georgia is really going to turn blue. But always hold in mind, I think we should always hold in mind, that the state legislature is still deep red. Although they've flipped a couple of seats, it's still red. And that the Republicans in the state legislature are holding the line through redistricting lines. They draw up district lines that benefit their particular party.
Gerrymandering. Gerrymandering.
Yes, gerrymandering. Absolutely. Gerrymandering is right here in Georgia. So they're going to, in the most recent census, if they certify those results, then that'll give the state legislature another opportunity to try to once again gerrymander in a way that's to the benefit of the Republican Party. So we have to wait. But I think we're on the road. I mean, but the demographic shifts in the state, I mean, there have been, I mean, I think sometimes folk over, and everybody, people begin to catch up with us now, but there's been tremendous demographic shifts. And the shift that we're talking about in terms of folk who are coming into the state, and especially into the metro area. Now, these are folks from the Northeast, people from the West and Midwest, who are not reared in the American South with all the custom and mores of the South. So they have a different kind of take, and they're younger. They're younger, a bit more affluent, they have a broader spectrum. They're more open to moving a little more to the Democratic side than folk who are already here. So a lot of things are happening.
I was just going to say, Dr. Boone, one of the things that was surprising to me was it's not just Metro Atlanta. You know,
right.
South Georgia, which most people consider rural, but in the Columbus area—
mm-hmm.
That went blue. In Augusta, it was blue. In Savannah, it was blue. And it's no longer just Metro Atlanta.
Right. They're stepping outside Metro Atlanta. I think if you look at the race that, whose name, Stacey Abrams ran, you look at some of those rural counties, and we looked at that some time ago, that there were rural counties that were moving towards blue or moving towards the Democratic column. Of course, that we can account for that maybe in terms of the number of new folk, because the areas you mentioned, the areas that we're talking about, although they're outside Metro Atlanta, are a bit more, they're less rural than folks think. They're not rural farm. They're just rural outside. They're just that in the metro area. So there are a different mix of people there as well. So, yeah, we can argue here that we're not necessarily talking about folk who've been in those cities or those areas for years. We're talking about folk who have migrated to those areas for various reasons, and primarily for jobs, quite frankly.
Now, you mentioned the upcoming Senate race, and I just want to give some key dates for the Senate election runoffs in Georgia. Yep. Everyone can request an absentee ballot right now from the County Board of Elections or the Georgia Secretary of State's office at mvp.sos.ga.gov. Absentee ballots will be sent out beginning November 18th. December 7th is the deadline to register to vote for the runoff. So if you weren't registered for the presidential race or you finally aged into registering, you can register up until December 7th if you're not currently registered. And early voting will begin on December 14th, and Election Day is January 5th. And we have all of this information on the WCLK website, and you can just click on our Georgia voting information box. And Dr. Boone, you brought up the two Senate seats. Do you think there's a chance that we might be able to send two senators from the state of Georgia that can help remove the gridlock that we know will exist if the Senate stays under Mitch McConnell's leadership?
Yeah, that's you're right. These particular elections are crucial to control of the Senate. That's an obvious thing. But yeah, and whether or not Georgia can do that is at this moment it's very, very tricky. It all hinges, quite frankly, in my opinion, on turnout. And whether or not folk, let's take the race between Loeffler and Raphael Warnock, Reverend Warnock. That race, once again, the Loeffler is trying to consolidate the far right wing in the Republican Party here in the state. She did the same thing with Collins. They tried to out Attila the Hun with each other. That's what she noted as being to the far right. So the question becomes whether or not they can trade on that. And since Trump is out of office, whether or not they can still trade on that and decide that they can rally people around that. For Warnock, it's a different kind of story. He and his group will certainly have to try to get folks back to the polls and also pick up some of those folk who are, let's say, a little less committed to that right wing phenomenon in the Republican Party and get more people out there. And what they will also have to do, that is Warnock, is to talk about putting Biden in with just one step and getting the job started. So it's going to be a tough battle. Now the Republicans, both Republicans and Democrats, are going to spend a great deal of money trying to do that. And most of that money will be spent on trying to get people to the polls, on the ground kind of thing, getting people to the polls. That's going to be where it's going to lie. Now, whether or not it can be done, at this moment, you may think that they can win one. Winning two is going to be a real stretch, because both Ossoff and Warnock are trying to unseat incumbent senators.
Now,
they really are.
Wouldn't they be able to appeal to people who want government to work, who want to leave the... I mean, government has not worked effectively since 2008. Mm-hmm. We had 2 years where Obama was able to get things done, and since that time, absolutely almost nothing has been done.
Right. You're absolutely correct. Very little has been done since the... flipping of the U.S. Congress and splitting of the U.S. Congress from, between Republicans and Democrats and one time Republicans, period. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a rational kind of view. But I'm not quite sure that people vote necessarily based upon rationality. And for those who have supported Donald Trump and the folk who support Trump, they're moving from what some would consider not necessarily a rational base. it's more ideology. Sometimes it's race. And sometimes folks even argue that the white supremacy is on trial here in terms of trying to preserve that. These are the kinds of reasons that may promote, that move people to vote. And your idea about irrational government. And the view is that, look, if nothing is being done in the view of those of us who would argue that the role of government is to facilitate people to move forward and to build a country, on the opposite of that argument is those who would argue that the role of government is to do absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing, and to preserve the status quo. And I think you also have this kind of view, Kipling, that although Trump, the person, is gone, the ideas that Trump represents, that now that they could use Trump as a manifestation of that, are still in existence.
Well, that is the scariest part to me about the last election and about our country in general, because 70 million people have experienced the lack of leadership for the last 4 years, which was bad enough when there wasn't a pandemic. But in a pandemic, our country has gone from 1,000 people dying a day to 2,200 people dying a day with no plan in place. There's no end game in the pandemic under a Trump presidency.
Absolutely.
The end game is more death. There are refrigerator trucks in Mayo Clinic right now.
Mm-hmm.
How can 70 million people live through this and say, yeah, let's do it again?
Right. I know it's baffling, but it's the kind of thing that one has to think about in terms, you cannot think along a rational base, because we're talking about folk who adhere to a certain, I'm arguing, this is my argument, you adhere to a different standard and measure of what is best. And it gets to the point where they feel they're being attacked. It goes all the way back to the argument about the fact that affirmative action worked only for black folk, and therefore black folk were displacing white folk. It goes all the way back to when the Reagan people and Nixon people were coming into the American South talking about how black folk were taking over the country. It goes all the way back to about foreigners coming in. So these are the kind of irrational arguments that are put forward. And these are the kind of things they hold on to. And they're arguing here about values, that their values are the values that should control America, and those values are under attack. And so what you're talking about certainly is a government or government structures that work for the people, and that the federal government, quite frankly, should be leading in those efforts. The pandemic is a very good example of that. It's certainly somewhat baffling that folk would allow give Trump a bye, those 70 million people would give him a bye in terms of his inactions, even though he knew as early as January, if not before, that it was coming. But they're prepared to argue that their values are under attack. And I think you can't downplay this whole business about the value of the cultural war and how people and how there are certain segments of the population that truly want to hold on to that.
It is an amazing thing. And if you're just joining us, this is The Local Take. I'm Kipling Primus, your host, and we're talking with Dr. William Boone from the Political Science Department here at Clark Atlanta University about the 2020 election. So you mentioned affirmative action, and I've had a conversation with some friends. If Hillary Clinton was in the White House refusing to concede the results of the election, you can imagine what people would be saying about hysterical, emotional women. That's why they shouldn't be in leadership.
And a great deal of responsibility for that is something that I would call, I blame the Republicans, because you have an abdication of leadership on the part of Republicans. In terms of that there's something that they should want to preserve that is greater than Donald Trump, the person. Because, you're quite frankly, what we have here now is Trump just advocating for Trump, not for the country, not for his party, just for Trump. But what you have also is that Republicans who refuse to say that the country is larger than the person or even the Republican Party. Because what Trump is doing, some would argue, is jeopardizing the safety of the country at large in terms of his refusal to acknowledge the results, his refusal to allow the transition to take place. But you're getting very few Republicans speaking out, because if more Republicans spoke out, then certainly that would send a message to the Republican rank and file. But they too are somewhat in a quandary about whether or not if they did that, would that alienate that base that they, especially those in the House, were elected on. That is the folk who adhere to whatever it is Trump is talking about and those Republican kind of positions, at least the Trump Republican positions. So you do have that. I would argue that it's Republican leadership that needs to be speaking out and forcing Trump to come to reality, because waiting for Trump to do it is going to be difficult. It's going to be very difficult.
And one of the things that has come up this year quite a bit has been health equity. When the new superintendent for Atlanta Public Schools came in and spoke about, you know, education in a pandemic, one of the things she mentioned was educational equity. In our community, we know that the U.S. educational system has failed African-American children, mm-hmm. Black and brown children, Latinx children. We knew this. This is built into our community's story. I did not realize that the U.S. educational system has failed all children, because the 70 million people that we're talking about are the least uneducated people in the country. They believe the QAnon theory that John F. Kennedy Jr. is coming back and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are running Pizzagate. How did the United States get into a situation where 70 million people can buy into these
kind of conspiratorial,
improbable conspiracy theories? Is this really all due to hold up white supremacy? I'm so very confused about I'm so confused. I really am.
Well, you know, Kipling, you know, of course, there are conspiracy theories are rampant in this country, all the way from the fact that folk did not land on the moon to other, and the aliens are controlling. I mean, these conspiratorial theories are there. But you're right. And conspiracy has been one of the things in America from the very beginning of the founding of the country. But I understand your point. Your point is that theories that seem to be out of the bounds of reality have taken hold in the country. And folk are beginning to organize their lives and their actions around those theories and beliefs in those theories. Sometimes these theories are exploited by those who know better. And I think that's part of what's happening right now, in terms of there are groups within, especially people on the right, who will exploit these kind of fears and amplify these kind of fears. If you begin from the point of view that the government is against you anyway, and that there's a conspiracy against people like you, then you prepare to buy into anything that's put out there. Even when you mentioned the Pizzagate thing about the pedophilia conspiracy, all of those things, you're right for that kind of stuff. If indeed you've already been prepped in terms of that this kind of thing, because you're quite right, there is a conspiracy right theory out there now that the entire U.S. electoral apparatus was against Trump and his people, and that's why Trump lost. And that just confounds and dumbfounds it about how that means that everybody who's involved, who has to be engaged, the entire country almost, would have to be engaged in this conspiracy.
And Dr. Boone, why would we only cheat for Donald Trump to lose? Why wouldn't we cheat for Lindsey Graham to lose and Mitch McConnell to lose? And
you're
it doesn't even make sense if you ask one question.
Right, you're right. Because, quite frankly, if you question the legitimacy of the electoral process in the presidential race, that would go back to your very point, that you have to question legitimacy of all the races, the ones that the Republicans won, not only and the ones that Democrats won, which meant that Graham and McConnell and all of that crowd, their particular elections are also illegitimate. But that kind of logic does not pervade these people. And that is why I argue, I go back to my argument of earlier, that this Republican leadership is a failed leadership because it refuses to acknowledge this. I mean, you cannot come out and say, well, he has a right to pursue this without adding to that, but the results thus far say he's lost and he should step down. But that failure in leadership is what continues to support these conspiratorial theories, because they have failed in terms of stepping out and saying, look, this is wrong. You cannot continue to do that and expect people to be supportive of anything you do, because you have already poisoned the water.
So how do we move forward? You know, yeah, hopefully maybe we do send two senators from Georgia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if things are so divided with the citizens, you know, half the citizens want authoritarian rule mm-hmm. with no leadership, and half right. the citizens want some kind of government involvement in their lives that is positive and that provides leadership. How does a country like that survive?
It is very difficult. I mean, you raise the key question that certainly I do not have the answer, but certainly you're absolutely right. How does Biden and Kamala Harris and whomever else they have around them begin to speak to both sides and ask for some accommodations? Now, for the Democrats, it would seem to me that they're really going to have to begin within the Democratic Party and begin to mediate the tension that exists between those who call themselves progressives and those who call themselves liberals and or moderates within that party to present some unified kinds of programs and policies. That's one thing that has to happen. The second thing I think may have to happen, and this is just speculation, is that Biden, given his long relationship with a good many of these Republicans who are still in office, is to begin to talk in terms of that we got to come meet on some common ground or this entire structure is going to fall apart. And that means meeting on grounds, not only on grounds in terms of the, let's say, the CARES Act, the second CARES package, but also on much larger questions in terms of the foundations of the country as it relates, let's say, to an issue like structural racism that gives rise to systemic racism, right? We got to begin to accommodate and come to some common ground on those questions. But that is a hard lift. That is a hard lift. And that, to me, those are some of the beginning steps. Both parties have to look internal and then come together and try to find some common ground. Both major parties, that is. Because as long as you feed the conspiratorial stuff on the right and on the left, you've tried to push forward programs that you just cannot get through, public policies that are just not going to go anywhere. Incrementally, yes, but in one fell swoop, no.
But Dr. Boone, that is so hypocritical. The reason the Republican Party has not come up with another health care plan is because, mm-hmm. as I've said many times, Obamacare, Romney Care, America, right. you know, the Affordable
right.
Cares Act,
Care Act,
that is the Republican plan.
It absolutely is.
That is the plan that came out of the Heritage Foundation. The
absolutely.
Democratic Party under Obama adopted that plan. Mm-hmm. They made a few changes in
right.
hopes to get Republicans on board to pass their plan.
Right, because remember, Romney used it in Michigan, right?
Yes!
It is the plan. It is the plan. It is their plan. And there's a hypocrisy there. Now, I don't want to move away from the fact that there are a lot of things working here. And so let's say take Georgia and about 11 or 12 other southern states with southern governors and legislative bodies. They refuse to even expand Medicaid only because it had Obama, because they thought that politically it would advance the Obama folk and the Democratic Party. That is a position that is detrimental to your own people in your own state. But they'll do it anyway. You're quite right. It definitely is hypocritical. But it advances something that you and I probably said, how can ideology supersede reality? And that's what we have here in terms of those healthcare programs.
So, Dr. Go ahead.
Don't forget that. I mean, I'm going to say that when it comes to the health situation, there's also this whole idea, but certain health programs, Republicans argue, will undercut the private sector. So that's a part of their argument as well. And you put out the false notion that you can't choose your own doctor or that someone else is going to decide what treatments you get, some bureaucrat. You spread all of that to undermine the program itself.
I think it's amazing. I want to end on a positive note. You mentioned Kamala Harris, yes. HBCU grad, Howard University grad, first African-American woman, first South Asian woman. Are we moving forward? Are we going to really move forward this time?
Certainly. I would certainly like to say yes, yes, yes to all of that. But I think it's still going to be a struggle in order to get that in terms of whether or not you're going to have the kind of acceptance of a Kamala Harris. Because what the story that's going out right now, you know as well as I do, that certainly a Biden is probably more than likely a one-term president, right? Because he'd be 82 in 4 years. And they're grooming Kamala Harris to be the nominee of the Democratic Party for 2024. And that's where the fight begins, right there. That's where the fight begins, whether or not they will accept her, whether or not those inside the Democratic Party will accept her. And it will be a struggle, not only in terms of the sexism involved, but also, you know, in terms of the progressives versus the liberals and moderates.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. Dr. Boone, I want to thank you so much. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, always a pleasure.
And I'll be reaching out again.
No problem. Always good to talk to you. Take care of yourself now.
The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is produced by Kiplin Primus, Jami Wellman, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. If you have comments about today's program or suggestions for future programs, you can leave a voicemail at 404-880-6211 or email kiplinprimus@gmail.com. You can listen to these interviews on demand at wclk.com or via the WCLK app. Thanks for listening.